The readings this morning were all from Luke 14, and all my thoughts are going to come from Luke 14 this morning. Jesus speaks in this passage about discipleship. In fact, the heading, little heading in my Bible says, the cost of discipleship. Sometimes I think the religious words that we use can maybe put us off, or, you know, because they're religiously charged, maybe we don't understand them fully, or something happens. I think discipleship is one of those words. I want you to think about discipleship simply as a way of life, a way of following God, okay? And if discipleship is a word that's okay for you, well, think about it that way as well. But really, Jesus is talking about something to live by, ways that we are to follow him in order that we might have life. You know, following Jesus is the path of life, and that's what we want. I want you to think about it also in two other ways. It's very tricky to try to communicate anything to a bigger group because there are so many different needs. There are so many different ways that you learn things that maybe I don't. I'm one of these persons, I tend to be able to get a lot of verbal cues, okay, and words, you know, I try to figure things out with words and ideas. That I get that. So one of the things I want to do this morning is maybe change that just a little bit for some of your sake. I want you to think about this in visual terms. I want you to be able to see the images here, okay, and I have to use words to do it, but the fact is, this is visual. There are three images that Jesus gives us here that tell us something about how we're supposed to live and how we might find life, how we might live our lives that is pleasing to God. Now, for those of you who may be sort of verbal types, I have this organized in another different way, and that is all three of my major points begin with the letter B. I'm not sure how that would work out in another language, okay? But I'm doing this in English. So think about the letter B here, and all three points begin with that letter. It's an alliteration, all right? And sometimes that's helpful for memory purposes. So the first point that we see that Jesus is making here in terms of how we might find life and how we might have a way to live is to bear your cross. Okay, there's the letter B, but also there's the image. In fact, it's the one image, is it not, that is probably the most predominant image of Christianity. It's right there. It's a cross. Okay? It's a visual thing. And maybe it's a little more than that, but I just want you to have the visual. And what Jesus says about the cross here is a little bit challenging for us. Maybe even it makes us cringe just a little bit when we begin to hear what Jesus is trying to say. Don't be afraid of it, okay? Just kind of follow along and see what Jesus is trying to do for us here. He says to us, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. That's very strong language. It may be a little bit more along the lines of another figure of speech, expressing it in such a way that's so dramatic that he makes his point. See, I think what Jesus is doing for us here is giving us a little bit more of a detailed perspective on the first commandment. What's the first commandment? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And when Jesus is trying to make it clear we should have no other gods, that means everything and everybody else in our lives as well. We don't literally hate our parents. We don't literally hate our children. But we recognize where they are on the scale of importance. And unfortunately, they're not number one. I say unfortunately, but it's not really unfortunately, is it? Nobody else gets the same slot in our lives, the same perspective in our lives as God does. He's first in all things, okay? What sounds heartless in some ways merely puts others in a position of secondary importance. Tribal or family solidarity, as good as that may be, may at times hold us back. Family members are to be loved and respected, not worshipped. And that's the distinction I believe that he's trying to make here. Notice what he says here also, that we are also to hate our own lives. So, you know, if all of our family and friends feel like that's pretty heartless, well, you know, we're supposed to feel the same way about our own lives, about ourselves. You see, we reject ourselves as the center of the universe. I'm not the center of the universe. I'm not all that important in the whole scheme of things. I'm not the creator. I'm not the source of my own life. God is the source of my own life. And are we not told in other places, trust in the Lord and rely not on your own insight? That comes from the book of Proverbs, chapter 3. Now, when Jesus talks about bearing our cross, and all this is in relationship to that, you have to remember something here. Jesus is on the way to Calvary. He's taking his cross so he can go and he can die on it. And we tend to think of bearing our cross as, well, it's just some burden that I have to bear. Maybe I have a burden that's unique to me. Maybe Eric has a burden that's unique to him. Or maybe you have various things you have to deal with that I don't have to deal with. There are certain temptations I don't have. Fortunately, I got enough others. One of them I don't have. I don't have the temptation to gamble. Okay? It just doesn't even appeal to me in any way. Some people do. Maybe that's their cross, or they think about that as their particular cross. That's not what Jesus is talking about here when he talks about bearing your cross. He's saying to us, we take our crosses and we die on them. The cross was an instrument of death in the first century. That's why we have in the image of baptism, if we think about another image here, that baptism is a death, a burial, and a resurrection. Because we're dying. Like Jesus died on the cross, we're dying in baptism. What Jesus is saying here is we have nothing less than living the crucified life. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, he said, I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 24, he says, we have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. In 2 Corinthians 4:10, Paul says, we carry around in our bodies the death of Christ. So when we bear our cross, he's simply telling us we have to die to our old way of life. The second image is one of building. There's your B. Your image is one of a tower. Jesus talks about building a tower, and he talks about building that tower with foresight. Any of us who have planned any project, we know you have to have a certain amount of planning involved. You have to have some foresight into what you're doing. You need a plan. You need the resources. You need money, manpower, and supplies to build anything. And if you don't have enough of those, the job is not going to get done. Or it's not going to get done well, one or the other. Very likely, as has been in my experience, when you start a project, one of the things you always plan into the project is you're probably going to need more time than you think. At least that's been my experience. Or I'm going to need more resources than I think. Because something always comes up. Something always ruins the plan a little bit. And so you build that into your thinking that, all right, here's my plan. As soon as I take it off paper and start doing it, it's going to change a little bit. So we have to be prepared for that. Starting a project is a lot easier than completing one. It's a lot different. You know, projects are fun when they get started. Well, depending on the project, of course. But, you know, we get all excited to get this project going and get it done. And we get halfway through and go, I'm getting a little tired of this. You know. Do we have both the exterior resources and the inner resources to complete the project? That's what Jesus is talking about when he talks about building a tower. What will it cost me to build this tower? And let's ask a couple of other questions as we're thinking about this. And I think the question Jesus is really asking here, can we finish? Do we have the inner resources that we need to finish the project? You know, in Matthew chapter 13, verses 20 and 21, Jesus described some people as like seed sown on rocky soil. The seed came up real quickly, but there wasn't enough root. There wasn't enough what you couldn't see under the ground to sustain the plant. And when persecution and troubles and when difficulties came along, the plant just withered quickly. Didn't have enough depth, didn't have enough resources within itself to continue on. Several years ago, you may have heard New York Giants coach Tom Coughlin talking to his players and talking to the media about how it was very important for the team to finish. You know, you get through three quarters and you've been beat up pretty badly and you don't know how it's going to do. Well, you know, of course, put the ball in the hands of Eli Manning, of course. But everybody had to think about finishing their own job. By the way, that's the year they won the Super Bowl. Okay? But he kept telling them, you got to finish. See, Jesus is asking us here, can you finish? Can you complete the job? Here's another question. How do we persevere when the initial excitement wears off? You know, the initial excitement of being a Christian, the initial excitement of knowing that I'm going to get eternal life, the initial excitement of having my sins forgiven. And you know what? I don't want to deny the importance of that feeling. But at some point, you have to kind of step back and ask yourself, have I really prepared for the long haul? Am I prepared to run a marathon or a sprint? Preparation is difficult for both of those, but our faith is a marathon. Will we be able to repeat exactly what the Apostle Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8? Listen to his words. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Paul finished. Paul persevered. And as we've read through a little bit of 2 Corinthians this morning, we know Paul had to deal with a lot of stuff. Everybody has to deal with a lot of stuff. Okay? But do you have what it takes to finish? Maybe we ought to ask ourselves another question to kind of finish this section off here. Will it be worth it? I think we know the answer to that. Sure. That's why we're here, because we think it's worth it. Think about that as you think about the image of building your tower as well. One more image Jesus gives us, and that's in verses 31 through 33. This is a little bit of a unique one, I think. But I'm going to call it battling your inner rebel. Battling your inner rebel. Now, this is a battle scene. And the image is, you have one king sort of holed up in his city, and he's got X number of, let's call them players, all right? There's another king who's laid siege to the city, and he says, and the guy inside the city sees that the guy outside the city has twice as many players. He can field twice as many soldiers as the guy inside. And so he's taking a look around. He's going, I'm not sure I can do this. Can I win this battle? Is this, you know, do I really have what it, you know, it's like, guys ever, you know, when you play sports, you know, you get out on the field and you look around, you go, man, everybody's twice as big as I am. You know, and you feel intimidated by it. You know, it's just a game, but you know, you kind of feel that sense of intimidation. This guy's really intimidated here, and he knows that we're not just talking about a score here. We're talking about life and death. That's the key. Can I win a battle against a much more powerful foe? Well, the interesting thing about this is, who is the larger force? The larger force is God. Jesus is saying to his disciples, you really think you can win against God? If you think that, just keep on doing what you're doing. If you take a look at God's resources and you know who God is and what he can do, you know that you cannot win against God. There's just no way you can do that. God is the larger force. And I'm really understating the case, am I not? The fact is, God is at war with a rebellious world. That's one of the images that we get very clearly all the way through the New Testament, into the book of Revelation in particular. And we see all these pictures of dragons and beasts and all these battle scenes going on and blood flowing here and you know people getting killed over there. It's a battle scene. That battle scene is going on with God versus the world. The world is in the hands of enemy forces. Colossians chapter 1, verses 21 and 22. Paul tells the Colossians that you were at one time hostile in mind. Hostile. That's a bad word, isn't it? That's us versus God. Hostile in mind toward God. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 3, he says, you guys used to be children of wrath. Now, I don't know about you, but anger is one thing that's a difficult emotion for me to feel directed at me. When somebody's angry at me, I'm pretty intimidated by that. I don't like that feeling. Okay? Depending on what the issue is, of course. But the fact is, when somebody's angry, it's a pretty powerful emotion. And I have to feel the brunt of it sometimes. I don't like that. Children of wrath, God is angry with us. God is angry with the world. See, God's at war with the world. We're at war with God. Maybe that's the way we should say it in particular. Jesus is asking a question here. Does our inner rebel want to surrender to God like we're supposed to? We have a choice. We're inside the city with half the soldiers that the one outside the city has. Do we want to surrender? Do we want to preserve our lives? Or do we want to fight to the bitter end and lose our lives? When it comes to God, we have to realize God is going to win. Well, can I live with that? Can I live with God winning over my life? I hope you answer yes to that. Because I think that's the point. You see, each one of us has this inner rebel. Each one of us has committed some sins. Every one of us has, at some point in our lives, whether we think it in terms of this or not, have been hostile in mind toward God. We simply call it sin. That's what sin is. It's a hostility toward God. It's saying to God, I'm going to do things my way, not yours. I'm going to rebel against you, God, and I'm not going to do things your way. God says, okay, you think you can win against me? Keep rebelling and just see what happens. You see, there's a battle that takes place. And it's not just this battle here, but it's the one that's inside of every human heart. Paul describes it in Romans chapter 7. And I think it's because Paul could look inside of his own heart and he could see that there was a battle going on. This is where the battlefield's taking place, right in here. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. You know, I know the right thing to do. Why am I just tempted by doing the wrong thing all the time? That's what Paul is asking. For I delight in the law of God in my inner being. I know the right thing. But I see in my members another law waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. If you're a human being, that's happening to you. That battle is going on. It's a battle for your soul. It's a battle for your mind. It's a battle for everything that you are. Do you want God to win? Can you allow God to conquer that? Do you want God to conquer that? If you want to have life, the answer has to be yes, that you have to surrender to God. You have to give in to His ways, not your own. Now, Paul will go on to describe here, and I want you to read and think about this later on. If we allow Jesus to conquer, it is, in fact, a triumph for us. Because when God conquers for good, not for evil. But you see, the thing is, I have to surrender. And that's the image of the battle. I have to surrender. Hey, but look who you're surrendering to. You're not surrendering to some evil force. You're surrendering to a God who really cares. Maybe it doesn't always seem that way, but that's the issue. God is a God who cares. Surrender to Him. I would conclude with just a couple of things. Two times Jesus warns His followers that unless they do these things, in fact three actually, that they cannot be His disciples. When He says at the end of this section to renounce all that He has, He's simply saying renounce all the ways of the world that conflict with the rule of God. Don't allow those things to take hold in your own life. We take these challenges not to turn us back, but to make us strong for the journey, to help us finish, to help us realize we have to finish. All these images are wrapped up in the plan of salvation. We have to have faith. We believe in the gospel. We have to repent. That's surrendering. Repenting is essentially surrendering to God. And we have to be baptized for the remission of sins. That's the cross. That's the resurrection. That's the death, burial, and resurrection made real in our own lives. And we have to keep on doing that. Consider the cross, the tower, and the battle as you make your decision for Christ today. Eric, let's stand and sing.